On this Tuesday episode of the Fumble Rooski podcast, Derek Carr announces his retirement after 11 seasons. And we take a look at the AFC East, as well as giving our top five safeties as we begin our offseason here on the Fumble Rooski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns. Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. He's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. Got a good one lined up for you as we are fully into the offseason at this point, as we are now a couple weeks out from the draft happening. Going to be a bit of a slower burn at this point, but did have some breaking news from this past weekend. Derek Carr, quarterback of the Saints, now former quarterback of the Saints, announcing his retirement after 11 seasons in the league. Unfortunately, was set to have season-ending shoulder surgery during the offseason. So he would have missed the 2025 season anyways. So now it's up to Tyler Shough and Spencer Rattler and Jake Haener. That is your quarterback room now for the Saints. But, you know, Derek Carr, not a bad career, I have to say. And gives some props. Being the brother of David Carr, who was the number one overall pick for the Houston Texans way back when, back in 2002. And so obviously you look at Derek Carr, and he had a lot of questions on if he was going to end up like his brother. And I think it's safe to say that he has surpassed it and then some. Yeah. Derek Carr, obviously, you know, you knew what you were expecting out of Derek Carr. You knew what you were expecting. He wasn't going to be top five quarterback of all time. He was going to give you a lot of bright spots. He was also going to give you a lot of dark spots. But at that point, he was a fun quarterback to watch. At least up until his tenure with the Saints.
Yeah, I feel like Derek Carr surpassing his brother, that's not a... Respectfully to David Carr, I do not believe that's a high bar. He's considered one of the more well-known draft busts in our time. But then again, that was just Houston screwing him over. I will tell you that wasn't entirely his fault. I thought I'd do something for myself. But yeah, Derek Carr, many people view him as like just the poster child for, you know, just average QB play. You know, he was never going to wow you, but he could win you some games. Kind of fell off towards the end of his career, but hey, the real folks out there will forever remember that 2016 Raiders season where, you know, they only had 16 games then. He started 15, went 12-3 before going down with an injury. And
that's
unfortunate.
They got bounced by the Texans that year, I remember, in the first round. Mm-hmm.
The they're down to Connor Cook because their other backup, Matt McGloin, I believe, got hurt. Yep, went 12-3, had a 63.8% completion percentage, 3,900 yards, 28 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. Even the season before that, though the Raiders were 7-9, he was still pretty solid. It's just he really just was not the same after that injury. He had like one good year for the then Vegas Raiders in 2020, where he had 4,100 yards, 27 touchdowns, and 9 picks. But that was as close to his old form. But then he did throw for 4,800 yards in 2021. But his touchdown interception ratio was just not that good. But as a whole, he was solid. I mean, definitely if you've been watching the NFL, you know, and if you start in the 2010s, you obviously know who Derek Carr is. And I won't say, oh, just another player from our childhood. But, yeah, kind of he is. I mean, he was a solid starter in the league for 2014 up to 2023. So, hey, tip of the cat to him. He's earned a lot of money, and I hope he has a nice retirement.
And he's also helping the Saints out as well in terms of his contract. They're freeing up cap space by also getting rid of his guaranteed money already. Or I'm pretty sure he deferred the guaranteed money now. Or am I talking out of my ass right now?
I'm not certain. I didn't hear anything about it.
Because I know that there was something that happened in terms of the money that helped the Saints be a little less in cap hell, which isn't saying much because they're deep in it.
Yeah, I mean, that's, let's just say that is true. This is really only going to be a drop in the bucket for them. They're still going to be firmly mired in cap hell.
Yeah. It was $30 million in salary was the recent contract. And it was a fully guaranteed contract, and basically it was just forfeiting that. So that's why the Saints are saving money in that regard. They don't have to pay him the rest of the contract. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our AFC East preview. Should be a more competitive AFC East this season than last season. That's for certain. I would probably compare this to maybe 21, potentially.
Yeah, I would say so.
I think that's a pretty safe comparison, but we'll get to that after the break. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. TCJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. Looking at the AFC East, a lot of changes, obviously. But let's start at the bottom first. At least in terms of this past season's AFC standings.
Yeah.
Let's look at the Patriots first, which, hand up, a little bit biased on that part, but that's just how the cards play out at that point. Patriots, pick top 4 in back-to-back drafts. I think it's potentially safe to say that they may have nailed it on both. Obviously, Drake May going number 3 to the Patriots 2 weeks ago. Will Campbell goes number 4 to the Patriots.
Yeah, that is true. This offseason especially,
yeah,
I do think that this is the first time that I also, as a fan, once again, I'll expose the bias right now, can tell you that they actually took a step forward. Like, the roster got better. I would argue this is the first offseason, the 2025 offseason, since 2021, where the team improved, the roster got better. Since then, they gave some quick fixes to it. And then it just completely deteriorated, completely fell apart. You know, in the draft, you had swing and miss after swing and miss. You, oh my goodness. You also had just boneheaded trades, letting star free agents walk, like, and these real band-aid solutions in free agency, if you did anything at all. And now, for the first time, I can actually say and believe it, that the team improved. And you have to look at free agency, too. They had a complete and total overhaul by bringing in guys like Stephon Diggs, Morgan Moses, Carlton Davis, Robert Spillane, and Milton Williams, if I said that already.
Yeah, may have, but I don't know. It's worth mentioning again.
Brought in with a whole bunch of people, including other guys too, like Garrett Bradbury, Mac Hollins, you know, Jack Gibbons, Harold Landry. Like, they went out there and they actually spent money, which, if you're a Pats fan, you're like, oh, hey, this is weird. Not something you see very often. And then in the draft, now for the past decade or so, the NFL draft was always something New England struggled in, but they thus far, I mean, on paper alone, it looks promising, which, once again, as a Pats fan, we can say is weird, because after every draft, we're used to it being pan, you know, oh, reaches, oh, another trade back. Why do they do this? But honestly, Will Campbell was, I think, a good pick, fourth overall. Travion Henderson from Ohio State was a nice pickup. Grabbing guys like Kyle Williams and Jared Wilson to also develop to help out the offense. And they got some two steals in the fourth and fifth rounds with Joshua Farmer and Braden Swinson. So, honestly, you can't even be mad.
And you upgraded the wide receiver room a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I don't know if you mentioned it, but Stephon Diggs, Mac Hollins.
I did.
Okay, sorry. But obviously you upgrade that. You look at the way Drake May played last year as well, and if you're just watching the box score, you're an idiot because Drake May was basically the only thing that was keeping the offense going last year, but barely. His stats were not great, and it was because of the team around him. Like, you know, just from watching the games, he is going to be good. And that was, I think, the biggest thing, too. Sorry again if you've already mentioned it, but the biggest thing with the Patriots was fixing up the O-line, and they had basically already gotten that done through free agency. They just needed one last piece, and that was Will Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, they did a lot in free agency, too. They grabbed Garrett Bradbury and Morgan Moses, because honestly, with Cole Strange and Mike Onwenu, you're fine at guard. Onwenu's really good. Strange, he's fine when he's healthy. And even so, you have City Salad as a backup, and that's fine. But it was tackles and center after David Andrews left. So now what it is that like I said, you got Garrett Bradbury from the Vikings, and you drafted Jared Wilson out of Georgia, who really has some promise. You grabbed a sturdy, reliable veteran in Morgan Moses at right tackle, and you drafted a stud in Will Campbell at left. And and wide receiver room. Now, the wide receiver room's just, it's not terrible. It's just very bleh. Like, there's nobody like obscenely terrible. Okay, outside Jalen Polk, but the guys you do have, like DeMario Douglas and Kayshon Booty, they could be 2 and 3s on other teams. Low end, it was 2, especially for Douglas, but still. But now you brought in Stephon Diggs, you have a solid deep threat with Mac Hollins, and you drafted Kyle Wilson, who's one of the better pure separators in the draft. So
Williams,
he's attempting to solve their problems, which is actually even an attempt is more what they've done in recent years.
Yeah. My favorite video right now in terms of the surrounding the Patriots is Scott Zolak on 98.5, and Bertrand's like, all right, I'm going to go through the list of opponents that the Patriots have. And he's like, oh, that's very doable. Win. Like, he had basically given like the Patriots all of their home games at that point. So honestly, when it comes to the Patriots, I can very much see that happening. I could see this being a 10-win team. I've been making the joke, obviously, that their ceiling is the Lombardi Trophy and their floor is 17-0. But obviously jokes. I could make this a
funny.
Yeah, thanks for laughing now. Fuck you. I could there very much see this being a whatever. Not very cash money of you to not laugh at me.
Sorry, Chris. You're my right. Heart goes out to you, bud.
Yeah, whatever. Patriots. I could see them very much being a 10-win team. Depending on how the Bills shape out, then maybe even competing for the top spot in the AFC East, which kind of goes with what I was with my comparison to the 21 season and how I think this is going to shape out, which also leads me to believe that the Patriots will most likely finish in second place in the AFC East this year.
Yeah, I feel like it's New England or Miami that's going to finish because Miami, like I keep saying, all flash, no substance. Flash does win games, but it's not sustainable. And they're kind of on the backslide, I would argue. But as a whole, if Drake May develops, that could be a scary team because New England does have the second easiest schedule in the league. And, well, on the road, they're going to face some tough teams like, I believe, the Buccaneers, the Ravens, the Bengals, among others. But New England, at home, with the crowd behind them, I think they're going to face like what? Like the Giants, the Steelers, like they could have a considerably easier time at home. And then they're obviously going to swipe a few on the road. I could see them becoming at least a 10-win team. Will that be enough for the playoffs? I don't know. But if Drake May develops, they could be one of those scarier teams that, you know, they're not going to win the Super Bowl, but you know that they're going to, that they could probably upset you if you're not careful.
I would say your toughest away games, as you mentioned, Tampa Bay. I'll throw Baltimore in there. Buffalo, of course. Miami, just because for some reason the Patriots
only love in Miami.
Yeah, it's, they always lose in Miami. Moving on to the Jets. Boy, what a dumpster fire this team was. And still kind of seems that way. They did hire Aaron Glenn, former defensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions. That's probably the best positive you can really think of about this team. Really the only thing that the Jets have, I guess, is Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, and Sauce Gardner. That's like you said, that's the best you can really come up with in terms of who to talk about on the Jets, unless you want to throw in Justin Fields, of course, because that's always a name to talk about. Jets finished 5-12 last year. Most notable departure is Aaron Rodgers, who's still currently a free agent, who according to sources, may sign with the Steelers once this schedule release comes out tomorrow. But yeah, I see this being a year of incredible suck for the Jets. Like,
yeah,
you see the graphic there. Jets longest active playoff drought in the NFL, 14 consecutive seasons. It's going to be 15, and then it's going to be 16. That's how the Jets are going to be the next couple of years. They are going to suck. And it's not like, it's not even going to be the fault of Aaron Glenn. Obviously, we're going to see in certain close games how Aaron Glenn is going to be as a head coach, or just in some of these games in general. Actually, longest playoff drought in professional sports, not even just football, just professional sports. And the last playoff appearance being 2010, where they made a run at the AFC Championship with freaking Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
Who the Patriots embarrassingly lost to, of course.
Yeah. I'm going to say that with the Jets, I feel like they need to do more. I just feel like the Jets needed to do more in free agency because, you know, they're already crumbling. They, you know, they gave a few quick fixes to that team and now they're just crumbling. And you know, it's bad when the biggest difference makers you sign were Brandon Stevens from the Ravens and Justin Fields from Pittsburgh. Like, Fields is solid, but I don't know. Also, it's just like, I like they re-signed Jamie and Sherwood. I thought that re-signing some of those lower key guys like Jamin Davis and Isaiah Oliver are good for the locker room, but I don't know. They needed to actually fix the holes on their roster and they just didn't. Their draft, I'm not going to lie to you, it didn't really do it for me. Armand Membu is a good right tackle. Mason Taylor was good in round two, but Azariah Thomas in round three was a bit of a reach. Arian Smith, round four, real big boomer bust guy. I liked Malachi Moore also in round four, but then there were fifth round picks. Francisco Mabagoa and Tyler Barron, I didn't even think would get drafted. So I just, the Jets were kind of in the same situation as the Patriots where they need to absolutely crush the offseason. And at the end of the day, they just didn't.
Yeah. I think you just going from Aaron Rodgers to Justin Fields in general is just, you already know you're in for a very, 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 very tough season.
Well, consider this. At like their best case scenario, it's a lateral move. That is best case scenario.
I would say best case. Yeah.
Is like just, it's a lateral, like that's it.
Yeah. I would say best case scenario for this team is that they finish with 5 wins, just like they did last year.
Yeah.
And I am going to have them finishing in last place in the AFC East. Potentially top 5 picks. Well, most likely top 5 pick. Miami Dolphins. This team is really just, it's really just a matter of if Tua can stay healthy. Because what they only have, they have one win when Tua's as Tua not being in a healthy available. When Tua does not play, the Dolphins only have one win.
Yeah, it's true. And the Dolphins are just so underwhelming, I guess, just as a team. They have all that flash, all these stats, like all those funny social media posts. You have the head coach, you know, chirping fans and spouting zingers at press conferences. And for what? I mean, the Dolphins' absolute ceiling, if everything goes right for them, is you're the 6th or 7th seed in the playoffs and you get bounced round one. Because you can't beat teams above 500 and you can't play in the cold. And guess what? Playoffs are in January, so unless you somehow secure the 1 seed, I don't see you winning. And the Dolphins are just another team where they, in free agency, they got guard James Daniels, quarterback Zach Wilson. It's one of those things where they had to overpay for positions of need. They signed Larry Baram from the Bears, who should not start at all. They gave a 2-year deal to Nick Westbrook-Ikhine in an already crowded wide receiver room. Ashton Davis from the Jets. They brought back Tyrell Dodson. I don't see anyone there who's really going to move the needle. Alexander Mattison? I doubt it. Pharaoh Brown, Patriots legend, by the way. Unlikely. Willie Gay Jr.? Nah, like, you need someone to move the needle, especially because even at your best, you're still living in Buffalo's shadow. And then there's their draft, which I think was one of the more underwhelming in the league. So round one, they went Kenneth Grant, the big defensive tackle out of Michigan, who I like fine, but not at 13. Like, you need offensive line help, and you need a corner to replace Jalen Ramsey, who will inevitably be traded, I might add. And you didn't address that till round 5. So then you have Jonah Savanaya, the guard from Arizona, at in the 2nd round, 32nd or 37th overall. I'm not going to lie, I think that was a solid pick. And then they didn't have any picks until round 5, where they got defensive tackle Jordan Phillips. Nah, probably not going to do anything. Corner Jason Marshall Jr. I don't think he was supposed to be drafted. And safety Dante Trader Jr., who has some upside, but don't count on it. They got Ollie Gordon, the running back from Oklahoma State, in the 6th round, who could be a really nice steal. Then the 7th round, they got Texas QB Quinn Ewers, obviously insurance for when Tua's brain goes full slushy. And then Zeke Biggers from Georgia Tech, who, I'm not going to lie to you, I've never heard of him.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Like, they just...
Also needs to be said is that there's going to be no Jalen Ramsey for them as well, because he's going to get traded before this season starts.
I said that, yes.
Sorry.
But
I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Oh, no, it is. It is. We've made, between you and I, we've made this abundantly clear.
I said,
at best, the same thing for the Jets, like, best case scenario, you've just made a lateral move and you're just stuck treading water.
Yeah. Best case scenario, I'd say probably 7 wins. I'm just going to look at their schedule now.
Yeah, it's probably like 8 or 9.
Yeah, maybe. Let's look at their schedule and see what we're looking at. Let's go look at
the, I know their schedule's on the easier side. This kind of like the AFC East kind of break this season, but
yeah. Yeah, Patriots. I think the Patriots had like 2nd easiest, maybe.
Yeah, Patriots have the 2nd easiest, but I feel like we should probably move on to Buffalo.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, I got Dolphins finishing 3rd.
Yeah, 2nd or 3rd, leaning 3rd.
Yeah. So the Bills, obviously reigning AFC's champions, lost in the AFC championship game to the Chiefs. because Chiefs are the daddies. But this is a team that had Josh Allen, of course, winning MVP. This was a team that was absolutely hot ever since week five or whenever they lost to the Texans. They just went on an absolute tear, winning 10 of their last 12 games. Of course, beating Broncos and the Ravens in the playoffs, both at home. And as mentioned, going to Kansas City and losing to the Chiefs. Finished 13-4. Team that a lot of people had hopes for making the Super Bowl. But especially a year where they were 1 year off of removed from Stephon Diggs, and everyone was like, geez, like Josh Allen's going to have no one to throw to, this and that, which still somewhat true. But, you know, we saw the emergence of Khalil Shakir. Keon Coleman was good here and there, not great. James Cook really, really popped off this season. Defense had a lot of issues. There was also a lot of times where the Bills' defense really stepped up. But there was also games where they were letting up 40-plus to the Lions, 40-plus to the Rams, stuff like that. Although that Lions game, they did come away with a win. So it had its moments. Bills, I could see this year still winning the division. I don't know about 13 wins, mainly because now you have the Patriots being really good. You never know. Patriots could get both, but I highly doubt it. They could get all four against the Jets and the Dolphins, maybe max three against those two teams.
Yeah, I see it.
But either way, I see this team being at least an 11-win team this next season.
I do feel I don't see them going below double digits. I do think 11's their floor. Now, I have a love-hate relationship with the Bills offseason because they did get some solid players like Kendrick Green, Dane Jackson, Larry Ogunjobi, Joey Bosa on a one-year deal. But some of the other better players they brought in, like Joshua Palmer and Michael Hecht, were grossly overpaid, both of them getting a three-year deal. And on top of that, they paid Khalil Shakir borderline wide receiver one, high-end wide receiver two money. And I feel it's a little much for him because I'm not afraid of Shakir like at all. But what saves the Bills offseason for me was their draft. Maxwell Hairston in round one. Speedy corner, you need him. Then they retooled the defense, getting TJ Sanders from South Carolina, Landon Jackson from Arkansas, and Dalen Walker from Kentucky. Those are great picks. And then you have some of those later round dart throws like Jordan Hancock, Jackson Hawes in the fifth round. Two guys I really liked in the sixth round with Dorian Strong and Chase Lunt. And then another dart throw with Caden Prather in round seven. Overall, I did like their draft. The free agency, not so much. I do think that they're going to be the same, but they do have room to improve. I'll give them that.
Yeah. Apologies for my dog barking in the background, but it's a good time for a break anyways, unless you want to keep going with the Bills. But Bills didn't have a pass catcher with over 821 yards this past season. Of course, as we mentioned, 1 year removed from Stephon Diggs, who ended up being on the Texans last year. Now, obviously, the Patriots. Those are going to be some fun ones. Pats, Bills, with Diggs playing against the Bills again. Those are going to be some fun ones. But
yeah.
But we're going to take a quick break. Sorry.
As well, you want to send us out? Maybe I'm joking.
Oh, that'd be cool. Let's travel to Buffalo. Let's travel to Buffalo. It's a good time up there. Try the wings. Go to a game.
No. I'm not going to a game, man. They're going to, like, you will get attacked there. Maybe. And careful.
I've been to a game up there.
They'll chunk pelts of ice at you, and they'll be like, we donate to charity right after they send T. Higgins a mountain of death threats. I'm still not over that, Bills fans, but whatever.
I was up there for the 2021 wildcard game, Pats, Bills.
Nothing
happened to me.
Yeah, Good for you. You're one of the lucky ones. Anyway, Chris, quick final verdict. I do want to ask you, since you're the host, what's your final verdict for the AFC East? For me, yeah. It's
Bills, Pats, Dolphins, Jets.
Same.
Yeah. I like it. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the safety position, preview the safety position. CJ and I are going to give our top five safeties coming into the 2025 season. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 18 Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. He's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. Take a look at our top five safeties going into the 2025 season. Can imagine CJ and I are going to have some similarities of at least who's in the top five, maybe the same order. We'll see. But CJ, I'll leave the floor to you to start.
Ah, thank you. You're very generous. So, kicking us off at number five, or I'm going to warn you, if you don't know ball, this is going to terrify you. But if you act, because for a position as weird and vague as safety, right, you're going to have to value what, you're going to have to talk about what you value more. Is it names or production? Because I'm going to tell you, this is going to ruffle some feathers right away. He used to be top three, but now at number five, Derwin James from the LA Chargers. 93 tackles last year, 5.5 sacks, 7 passes broken up, and a pick. I can't hate it. I really can't, especially only allowed a 62% completion percentage with a strong safety. That's pretty good. And only a 3.1% missed tackle percentage. I really do like that. That's great. But the thing is, as he gets up there in age, he's becoming more and more of a Jamal Adams type, if that makes sense to you. He's really starting to be, I'm not going to call him, he's so old. No, just not like that. Don't mistake that. I'm just saying he's just, I don't know how to put this. Just like they're starting to use him less in coverage and more to like stack the box, you know, which kind of what happens to safeties as they get older. Like they bring them closer to the line so they can hit more so that they don't tend to get burned in coverage. But still, he is worth being in the top five. Now, my number four, kind of a similar model, but much younger, Kyle Hamilton of the Baltimore Ravens. Now, this man right here, 107 tackles, 2 sacks, 9 passes broken up, 2 forced fumbles, and a pick. This man just flies around the field. Only gave up 326 yards last year, only 1 touchdown, and 2 passes batted away. He's even managed to hurry the quarterback a few times, less than 10% missed tackle percentage. I believe he was a second-team All-Pro and a Pro Bowler as well. So honestly, tip of the hat to him. Ravens got a good one. I was always a fan. And the top three might get a little scary for some people. So, kicking us off, number three, Xavier McKinney of the Green Bay Packers. 88 tackles, a sack, 8 interceptions, and 11 passes broken up. Pro Bowler, first team All-Pro from last year. Or AP first team, you know, AP1 as it's also known. I'm going to be honest with you. I think it was a great season for him. My only issue is his stats are overly inflated because he got off hot to start out last season. He had like a pick in like the first 5 or 6 games or whatever. And then especially towards the back end of the year, he really started to fade away like almost entirely. But still, he did pick it up at like the tail end, especially for the playoffs. So I really can't hate him at all. But and at least he did come back. He didn't just go quietly. So honestly, I feel like number three is a good spot for him. Now, little disclaimer here, okay? I think you can put these next two in any, like you can flip them. My number two is Kirby Joseph of the Detroit Lions. 83 tackles last season, 58 solo, 9 interceptions, which I believe led the league, 12 passes defended, and they even got a tackle for a loss. That's nice. And he allowed a 44.2% completion percentage along with only allowing 330 yards and one touchdown. Kirby Joseph is a guy who keeps taking leap after leap every year he's in the league. And he is rewarded with a first-team All-Pro, and I believe came in sixth place for Defensive Player of the Year. A lot of other fans don't like him, but, hey, you got to love just the fight and the hustle that he brings. That's just great. But for me, maybe I'm biased. My number one is – or I mean biased towards the name – Jesse Bates from the Falcons. Jesse Bates III, as it were. 102 tackles, 62 of them being solo, along with 2 tackles for loss, 4 interceptions, which isn't as crazy as 8 or 9, but you got to look past that. 10 passes broken up, but here's the thing. 4 forced fumbles and a sack. He only allowed 345 yards and, you know, sub 10% missed tackle percentage. And just another one. You have a player, especially a defensive back in triple-digit tackles, you can line up everywhere, who picks the ball off, who's always there, and can force fumbles. That's huge. I just feel like the versatility really can get you there. But he's not a one-trick pony. Like I won't say he's a one-trick pony, but I was going to mention Derwin James, kind of where he's almost forced to rely on one thing. But Jesse Bates? Nah, this man, I think he's – still got the crown there, but you could, depending on the day, convince me for Kirby Joseph. I think there it's a 1A, 1B kind of thing.
I like it. Good list, CJ.
Ah, thank you. You're very generous.
But unfortunately, here's why you're wrong. I'm kidding.
I was going to say, all right, Adam.
Honestly, like, I think that you could, in terms of the top 10, like, if we were to do a top 10 safeties, I think you could really interchange a lot of them through the top 5. But we'll start off with a bang. Jabril Peppers, safety for the New England Patriots, going number 5.
Said I'm wrong.
Look, I think of Jabril Peppers as that hard-hitting safety that you want on a team. Kind of like a Ed Reed hybrid, someone that can really come across the middle and lay someone out if need be, but that's not their main game. That's not their main game. It's coverage and very smart. Jabril Peppers, shut the fuck up, Adam. In my ear, talking about assaulting people. Charges were dropped.
Yeah, charges were dropped. His girl lied.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, though, like, guys, look into it. Like, she actually did lie.
Anyways, we're not here to talk about that. We're talking about Jabril Peppers as a football player. And he's a damn good football player. This is a guy that is an absolute ball hawk. Guy that can punch the ball out when need be. Also, it just feels like when I watch Jabril Peppers, he's in the right spot at the right time. That's one of the biggest things for me. Looking at number 4, Reed Blankenship. Everyone thinks of him as a corner. He's actually listed as a safety. And he had a fantastic rookie season. I see him making that jump as being, at the very least, a top 5 guy.
Yeah.
Or pardon, I'm thinking of Cooper DeJean for some reason. But you know what I mean. Reed Blankenship had a spectacular season. He's going to end up elevating to be that top 5 guy. Cooper DeJean. Shit, Cooper DeJean could be the same exact thing for all we know. Like, they basically already unloaded half of the secondary. Leaves room for guys like Reed and Cooper DeJean to be top 5 guys. All right. Enough of the exciting whites. Let's head on to my number 3, Jesse Bates. Now, I think that in terms of the top 3, see, I'm just going to get out of the way. Top three, CJ and I have the same guys, just different order. And in my opinion, you can intertwine each of these three.
Yeah.
Here's my reasoning for Jesse Bates not being number one. It's the importance of the pass game. Now, with that being said, yeah, he only had four interceptions. But to your, as you mentioned, CJ, he also had 102 tackles, which in my eyes, how I see that is him being able to fill the alley beautifully. You also mentioned the missed tackle rate, extremely fucking low. He's a great safety to have. He's one of the few bright spots that Falcons defense had this season for a defense that was underwhelming, to say the least. Looking at number two, Xavier McKinney. And now we're starting to get into more of why the top two the way it is. Xavier McKinney had a huge breakout season, ended up having eight interceptions, had a couple tackles for loss, one sack to his line, 88 total tackles. Very, very, very good player. 11 pass defended, I should say, is the actual stat name. This is another guy that just can cover an entire field and really elevated the Packers defense. Along with Jair Alexander, of course, but Xavier McKinney really picked up the slack when Alexander got hurt. And finally, Kirby Joseph. I think he's easily the top safety going into this year. Another ball-hawking safety that came away with nine interceptions. It's along with what you said, CJ, I don't think there's really much else more to say about the top three.
Yeah, I do want to point out that the reason why I had Jesse Bates over McKinney and Kirby Joseph is that it's not so much about who was the best last year, but who we think's going to be the best this year, right?
Yeah.
And I feel more confident with Jesse Bates going on the trajectory that he's going and still playing at this high level than Xavier McKinney and even Kirby Joseph replicating career years, because they really just burst onto the scene. They really just became that top tier. I'm going to need to see him do it again.
Yeah.
And there was one thing I want to say to the viewers that you may have noticed. Minka Fitzpatrick was not on either of our top fives. And, you know, I guess last year would have made sense considering the fact he only played nine games and he was coming off an injury. But this year he was healthy, but he just didn't do anything. I won't say he looked like a shell of himself, but he didn't look like his normal self. He got burned repeatedly. He wasn't as explosive. There were no splash plays, no impact plays, really no nothing. So, unfortunately, we kind of had to leave him off. And he's 28, I believe. So, it's not like he's hit the football version of unk status. He's not 30. So, he has time to turn it around. But an injured season, then a season where he just doesn't produce, that's not a good sign, and he's going to have to earn his way back to the top five, at least for me. And I feel like you'll probably feel the same way, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, you go from 64 tackles in 10 games played to 96 tackles in 17 games played. You played the full 17-game season. You only came away with one interception, four pass defended. Did have a couple run stuffs here and there, but, like, just if you take the tackles themselves and just average that, then it just automatically feels like a down year at that point anyways. And like everything about Minka Fitzpatrick has felt off. He's only 28, so he's still got at least a couple of years of prime still left if we want to consider this still his prime. But like, it's far from the early days of when he was in Pittsburgh where he ended up having a total of 11 interceptions in the first 3 years.
Yeah, Chris, you have a point. But once again, I do think that we are in that same sphere of agreement.
Yes.
That he's going to have to earn his way into the top five.
Yeah, no, I was more building off of what you were saying, but it sounded like I was trying to prove you wrong.
No. You're right. You're right about him. It's just, like I said, an injury riddled year followed by a down year. That's usually not a good trend.
No. But yeah, that's all the scheduled content that we have for you today. I guess the one other bit of news that did come out yesterday was Trey Hendrickson revealing that there's been no communication on either his side nor the Cincinnati side about a new contract. And that he also said that he's not willing to play in this upcoming season if a contract isn't done. Ooh, that's not a
Cincinnati
good sign.
Bengals, everyone, they're doing it again. They're literally just the great value Dallas Cowboys when it comes to re-signing their players. They wait till the last minute and let the market dictate them instead of them dictating the market.
For some reason, like, they've been playing this whole, like, even with Higgins and Jamar Chase, like, they've been playing this whole thing, this whole game of, oh, let's see if they're going to suck this year, and then we can lowball them. And then they don't suck, and then they try to lowball them, and it's like, the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
It's just stupid. You're trying to pay a guy, like, an average salary when he's really, like, top five at his position.
The GM's got to go, but... And again, at this point, we're almost at 50 minutes. So do we.
Yeah. So that's why we're going to go. Thank you for tuning in for another episode of the Foam Brewski Podcast. New episode coming out at 7:30 next week. Not doing any more Friday episodes unless some breaking news happens. We'll throw out an episode out there. Talk about the breaking news, such as Jalen Ramsey maybe going to get signed somewhere. Or traded, I mean. Who knows? But... thank you for tuning in. Of course, new episode coming out on next Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have all of our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow our Instagram, FoamBrewski_podcast, to keep up with the pod and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, CCJ Medeiros, I'm Chris Kostich. We'll see you next Tuesday. Over and out.